well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
Lee and I today are welcoming Chris Balkema, who is running for state senate in Illinois. How are you doing today, Chris?
Good, good. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. What is the district that you're running for to start off with?
So it's the Illinois State Senate District 53. It's currently occupied by Tom Bennett. He's an incumbent Republican, and he has chosen to retire and not run again. So it's an open seat. It goes all the way from the Indiana border all the way to the East Peoria area, and then up in Minooka, Shanahan, where we live, and then down to Bloomington Normal area.
It's a large district.
Very large.
Yeah, I was surprised by that when I went to your website and then I looked up the district. I was kind of shocked at how big that district is. Is that common in Illinois? Is it a bigger one, or am I just
ignorant? It's a great question. So out of the 12.5 million people in Illinois, there's 59 districts. So if you do the math, that'd be roughly 219, 220,000 people. And geographically speaking, this district is one of the largest. And so during the 2020 redistricting process that they go through every year based on the census results, this one was drawn in a way that geographically occupies a lot of land, but the 220,000 folks are clearly spread out. Overall, of course, there's 59 Senate districts and 118 state representative districts. And so for every two rep districts, there's one Senate seat. And that's how the process is set up.
Wow.
Gotcha. That's probably that the quantity or measurement of people within that area. But then considering the geographic size, that's probably a pretty good example of why we have an electoral college.
Yes, that it is. And to be honest, I believe that this is a pretty conservative district, which fits my DNA very well. And so I'm quite happy with that. Overall, I believe it was drawn this way because there's other districts that the majority in power, in this case the Democrats, wanted to protect. And so therefore, a lot of conservatives were packed into this district. Again, I'm super happy to represent those folks.
Yes.
Because that is my DNA. But I believe that's kind of the overall process of, they could be considered gerrymandering.
I could see that.
Interesting. Wow. You know, in that vein, one of the questions I was really excited to talk to you about is, I would like to know what you see. You know, of course, this is a Second Amendment oriented podcast. And I was wondering, you know, how you see the landscape in Illinois. It seems like we've had two big things over the last, you know, decade or so. Of course, the Illinois Concealed Carry Act, and now the PICA Act, or the PICA law. And I was just wondering, like, how, from your perspective, how you see that landscape right now in Illinois. What's your take on things?
Yeah, from a power grab perspective, I believe a governing party that is in control, if they have the motive to continue to take away, in this case, the right to bear arms, they're going to continue to do that. And so, unfortunately, I've seen that play out in my time as on the Grundy County board, and I've been on the board for 13 years and been chairman for the last six, but overall we've just seen that the right to bear arms be really challenged, and I don't believe that they're going to, you know, back off. I think it's going to continue. So I think we've got to push back on that. I'll tell a quick story on the campaign trail.
Please do.
Just talking about how big the district was. I was over in the western portion, and I knocked on the door of an 89-year-old man that still lived out on his own, great guy, he and his wife. And we got to talking about the Second Amendment, and he told the story. He is first-generation German descent, and so he told the story of his father that actually lived the Hitler era in Germany. And he said he remembered he was, of course, you know, very young, but his father, he remembered his father telling him that Hitler first came through and asked everybody to register the guns in the government in power, which a lot of people complied. And then, I don't know, 15, 18, 20 months later, they came back through and said, okay, we want these guns. And so from a slippery slope perspective, I believe it's very dangerous. And, you know, Illinois already has been so liberal along those lines. And the power grab that is being pushed here more recently is just a red flag that it's not in line with our Constitution. And I can tell you the majority of the 12.5 million people are not represented by the people controlling Springfield right now, and we definitely have to push back.
It's definitely a concerning movement, that I'll call it. So with that, what does the Second Amendment mean to you specifically?
Oh, it's kind of the foundation. It protects us as citizens and it represents a balance of power. And without that, I think that's why it's the Second Amendment, not like the 20th or the 30th, because it didn't take long for the founding fathers and the people to realize that this was critically needed. And it's a balance of power. Without that, you know, we're moving quickly towards the socialistic and state where there is no balance of power and there is no check and balance. And so from that perspective, even if we look at Israel, which is our great ally,
yes,
and we look at the number of folks that were caught off guard during the invasion in October,
right,
it's a telling sign of what happens when in that case, I would say, you know, well-intended laws go way out of control. And in our case, in Illinois, I'd say it's not, there's no part of it that's well-intended. It's a power grab. But without that, we have no way to have the balance of power, and we become as citizens very vulnerable.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And in fact, I almost interrupted you and said that I don't think that it's well-intended. And then you spoke those words for me.
Yeah, I think in Israel's case, some of the laws they had on the books were well-intended. You look at, you know, it's required for young people to go through the military. There's a whole lot of other checks in place. But when the invasion occurred, you know, there was a lot of the population that did not have any, you know, way to defend themselves. And it was a living example of what happened in our case in Illinois. And I believe at our federal level, it's malicious intent, you know, right up front. And it is not in the best interests of anybody who cares about the history of the United States and the future of the United States as it was founded by the fathers. And so therefore we've got to push back.
I agree with you 100%.
Wow, well put.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that outlook. I agree with you.
Chris,
the nice thing is that the supermajority right now is the extreme Democratic side. That is not represented by the majority of the people. I would say the supermajority in Springfield represents the super minority of the 12.5 million. And so people get discouraged and say, you know, why even try? And my point is, you know, there's 12.5 million of us out here that want what's best for Illinois and want what's best for the country. And I'm extremely optimistic that we can move in that direction.
I could see that in the future. Prior to starting the podcast today, Lee and I were talking a little bit, looking into some of the numbers. And Illinois has about 12.5 million population. Is that what it was?
Correct.
And yeah, then there are approximately 8.5 million registered voters.
Yes. Yeah.
And then approximately 2.5 million of the population in Illinois has a FOID card. And that's a very large block, percentage-wise,
yes,
of the registered voting populace. So I guess my question would be, among others, is why don't more Illinois Republicans not make the Second Amendment and protecting gun owners a bigger issue, seeing how there are so many of them?
Yeah, it's a great point and a great question, and really one to marinate on a bit. I think one part of it is folks become conditioned, and we need a lot more people to stand up and understand what happens when guns are removed. And I think people can become complacent. And so I think part of that is people become conditioned and complacent. I think that those that are active with their firearms are much more engaged. There's some people that have a FOID card that have it, but don't, you know, spend a lot of time hunting or
shooting. Yeah, sits
shooting
in a dust drawer or something.
Right. So I think one factor is complacency. And another factor is not either apathy or not engaged in politics at the state level. And quite frankly, there can be pressures that we need to discern and understand and push back on. And some people don't want to ruffle the boat and rock the boat and ruffle the feathers. But I think in this case, we need to do both. We need to do it in a way that is going to move the needle in the right direction. So it's to just enjoy the microphone and push back loud on the other side, I don't think always gains us the best amount of ground. I think strategically approaching this and actually rallying support through the best manners possible. And sometimes you got to stand up. And I'm saying that there's a time and a place for that. But I think that there is a lot of conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, that understand what happened in Europe in the 40s and would be willing to jump on board if we could put a path out there that protects our country. So I'm going to stand on principle, and I'm going to push hard, but I'm going to do it in a strategic way if I can get down to Springfield that will bring people along. And I don't care if people agree or disagree with me on the Second Amendment. I'll spend, you know, all the time in the world talking to people, because at the end of the day, all of us are wired with the same needs and wants. And very, very, very few of us ever want to become a socialistic country through and through, even though those words are played back in social media quite a bit now.
Yeah, socialist or any other type of tyranny, whether it comes, yes, from the right or the left.
For sure.
Thanks for that. I appreciate your really optimistic and thoughtful response on that. It's very refreshing to hear from a politician. Chris, could I ask, how long have you been in politics?
Yeah, so I graduated from a Christian school in Indiana called Taylor University.
Okay.
It's very similar to Wheaton Christian College, for those that know Wheaton.
Yes.
But I graduated from there and went to work at Caterpillar in 1993, and have been involved in Caterpillar, of course, all the way through. I actually continue to work there at the moment.
Wow.
Got 30 years in different leadership, operations, and human resources, purchasing leadership roles.
Wow, you've seen a lot of changes over the years. That's amazing.
Yes, yes. And one of them is our headquarters moving from Illinois to Texas.
Yeah.
And so our company has not been immune to some of the changes. But overall, I got involved in our local school board in 2009 when I realized what my property tax bill was doing. And made some good headway there. And then I actually was fine to do that and serve in that capacity. Somebody told me about our county board, Grundy County Board. And they said, you ought to run for the county board. And I said, no thanks. I just got on the school board. I'm serving out my term there. I'll serve again. And they said, well, did you know that the people, the board members, and it was Democrat majority at that time, but they said the board members voted in a bill where they pay themselves double the mileage limit. So whatever the IRS mileage limit to go to meetings back then was, they paid themselves double. And I said, well, that's really unfortunate. And I said, well, you know, I hope they change that. Well, then the person that was working to convince me didn't stop. He said, well, did you also know that they have a Cadillac healthcare plan where they enjoy the same, the board members enjoy the same benefits as the employees, even though they only might go to three meetings a month, 3 hours a month, they can have full healthcare coverage for them and their families. And I said, whoa, I didn't know that.
Sweet.
So I basically got fired up enough to this and decided to run. So it, in 2010, a group of us ran and we won. And of course we reversed those things. We got rid of the double mileage. We got rid of the healthcare plan and had along the way developed some good relationships. And I walked in there and I learned, I was not perfect by any stretch. I'm still not, but in some cases I pushed too hard. I worked with, in that case was at that time we flipped the board. It became a Republican majority board, but just by a very slim nature, is like 10 Republicans to 8 Democrats, is 18 members overall. So I learned to work with people. And the nice thing that's happened, I became chairman in 2016, but cycle over cycle between 2010 and 2022, the last cycle, every cycle, a few more Republicans won, and we ended up now where we are 17-1, 17 Republicans to 1 Democrat.
Okay.
Board. And no kidding. we didn't push hard. We didn't, spend the money in campaigning. It was just the voters saw the results, and little by little, they wanted more of those results. And so it's been a great, so really the county has become very red in the last decade. And again, we don't spend a lot of time on Democrat or Republican. We just go in there and get our job done. It just so happens that
excellent.
The Republican base gets in there and gets the job done. And so the voters have continued to put more of us in office.
It happened organically. I like it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there's a few Democrats around in different capacities, and we get along great, and they roll up their sleeves and get to work as well. So it's a very cohesive board now. Now, that's not to say that, again, like I talked earlier about standing on principle, if we're not going to just, appease people and start moving in a direction that's not the right one for the county. But so far it's worked out very well. And I would like to take some of those skill sets that I've been able to learn and get to Springfield and take a crack down there.
Awesome. If I listened correctly, so it sounds like you got into politics like in the 90s originally. Is that, am I right?
Well, actually 2009 was my first okay. time on the school board, and then 2010. So I've been in about 13 years.
Yeah, it was just, so I'm not trying to underestimate your bravery, because I think anytime a person puts themselves out there for, public office or any type of risk that way, it's commendable. And I'm just wondering, would you have, if you were a young self or even not so young self, would you be willing to do the same thing today with as divisive as politics, or would you feel even more called today? What do you think about that?
Yeah, actually, if I had to do all over again, I probably would have started a little earlier.
Interesting.
I think it's so important to, all of us are called to different disciplines and different career paths.
Yes.
And as the founding fathers, put this country together, the intention was to come and to serve in different capacities, go back to your career, perhaps then serve in a different capacity, go back,
yes,
continue your career. And the term career politician didn't exist in the 1700s, the 1800s, when the country was in its earlier years. And so I've been chairman now for 6. Well, that'll be 3 terms, or really I came in halfway through a term. So it's my 3rd term. And I don't, that's another reason I'm running for the state Senate, is I we've grown other board members' skill sets. Other people can jump in and lead. I don't need to be chairman for another 6 years. And so I think that any time a person is in their job too long, they become complacent and in some cases take things for granted. So I think I would have gotten in earlier and probably served on some different local boards, continued my career at Caterpillar because that's what I know and love, But I think people serving in and out of different leadership positions in local government is very healthy. And if more of us did that, I think we'd have much more checks and balances in the governments.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And I'm hoping it sounds like maybe also too, that maybe state politics isn't as vicious as, maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm thinking about some things, but and not as vicious as things seem today. It just seems like politics is so, so particularly divided and divisive lately. And I'm wondering if that's a misperception or would you like to comment on that?
I think it's real. Yeah, I think it's real. It is divisive.
Worse than you've seen it, or
yes, same? in the last 10 years, I would say more so. Now you have to that's hard for some people, and other people it's motivating.
Okay.
It just depends on the personality of the person.
Sure. Yeah.
In my case, I don't mind a good conversation. Now, the shouting and the rhetoric and making other people feel bad about themselves, or, you know, that is where I try and not do. Now, I'm far from perfect, but
yeah.
I think having constructive conversations and negotiations is, I tend to enjoy it.
Sure.
Early on when I was first dating my wife, we were engaged to be married, and we were going to go buy a used car, and we went together, and we didn't, you know, hadn't known each other for that long, but we picked out the car that we wanted, and we didn't have much money, so I needed to negotiate. And so I sat down with the salesman, and it was a nice young guy, probably about my age, and we kind of had a couple of rounds of negotiation on the price of the car. And he was having fun with it, and I was too. And my fiance at the time said, "I got to go." And I said, "Why?" And she just said, "I can't handle all this bantering back and forth." So she excused herself, and I finished, you know, the session and ended up with a decent price. But it just goes to show all of us are made and created in God's image in different ways. And I tend to enjoy a good constructive negotiation. And I think there's going to be a lot of those needed in Springfield. And there's once you get to the core of issues that need our attention, there's going to be a lot of conversation needed. And quite frankly, I look forward to it, because at the end of the day, the nice thing is the truth never changes. And we all are human beings with the same needs and wants, and just happen to have different personalities. And so I tend to be super optimistic that we want America the way it has been more than we realize. And I think we're going to get there.
All right. I like it.
I do too. And to kind of go along with what you said with those conversations, I think that when there's a healthy debate, a healthy conversation with opposing points, and everybody can maintain their composure, listen to one another, it doesn't escalate into arguing or feelings of miscontent with one another, they're actually much more productive. Once people start yelling and raising their voice and just announcing, well, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, people stop listening. And when people stop listening, things stop happening.
Yeah. What one example would be, Grundy County's made some headlines, and this is off topic from the Second Amendment, but County's made some headlines recently about immigration, and we've taken some proactive measures to ensure buses don't drop off migrants in Grundy County and leave them out in the cold, and it's just the whole thing's inhumane.
Yes.
And so we've taken some measures to make sure that's one being we passed a resolution that made Grundy County a non-sanctuary state, or excuse me, county. And second one is we passed a resolution that gave me some emergency powers if needed to use buses or whatever measures to move people along to train stations to Chicago if for some reason they did get dropped off and at 3 a.m. at the truck stop and, you know, freezing temperatures. So anyways, we button things down pretty tightly to ensure that from an immigration perspective, we will welcome immigrants legally, but not through the illegal path. Well, you know, I've gotten pushback a bit on from some reporters and things. And the question I always ask is, okay, I've had probably 98% of the people reach out to me that are local residents and say, thank you. That's wonderful what you did. And I've had a few people that I don't know where they're from saying, I'm not going to do business in Grundy County anymore because you are taking this extreme approach. And the question I always ask them is, you know, I appreciate your opinion. So tell me, how many illegal immigrants do you think we should let in the country? 5 million? How about 20 million? Or maybe 50 million? Do you think that's enough? And it just takes a couple of those questions to obviously they can't answer. Because nobody in their right mind agrees that we should just have the floodgates open,
right,
and have people come in to the point where it changes the composure of the country because we can't take care of them. We've broken so many laws that, you know, you're already behind the eight ball because Illinois has given them a driver's license. Illinois gives them health insurance. And so it just becomes anarchy.
Taxpayer money. The other question I want to ask.
All our money.
I want to ask someone who proposes that is, well, how many illegal immigrants are you willing to sponsor personally?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
They're
that's
more than willing
question.
To spend taxpayer money, but well, you know, seems hypocritical.
Exactly. So, to sum it up, I tend to enjoy tough conversations, and I'm far from perfect at it, but I think we have to engage versus disengage.
So within some of those conversations that you hopefully get to present sooner than later, what do you think can be done to regain the full rights of gun ownership here in Illinois?
Yeah, I think that one is to look at what's happened since September 18th. So, you know, the latest round, I'll call it, took effect September 18th. And if you look now in that was the cashless bail system. So then if you look going forward now in December, the actual registration was required. And so if you look at those two things in parallel, number one, we've got people that are out of jail within hours. And clearly, I looked at statistics the other day in our county where the number of people that have been rearrested because they, you know, performed the next issue that they were in there for the first place. So if they were in there for drugs, they got back, I got out, got rearrested, and they're back in. So if you look at the cashless bail and what happened there, it's not working. People that need help and that are quite frankly better off in jail going through the process than getting released a few hours later. And then couple that with the requirement in December here to begin registering, you know, so-called assault weapons. And if you look at that, it's power grabbing. What are we at? I think the last data was 2.4, 2.5% registration.
It's
so
low.
That's
it's
not working.
Low.
Yeah. So that's not working either. So, you know, the first question in the conversation to have with those that wrote the bills and those that passed the bills would be, well, you know, let's look, you know, if I can get elected, it would be in January of 25 after I'd get sworn in. So it'd be like, okay, we've got a year and a half under our belts. How are these laws working? And I would love to ask the questions for the people that sponsored and wrote them to say, let's just do a review. You know, number one, did the bill that you wrote pass the intent of what you wanted to happen? And then secondly, what do you want to have happen? You know, let's look at the data to say on the registration side, people don't register their guns. So are you saying that 98%, if there's, you know, call it 5% by then, if 5% register their guns by then, are 95% of the other folks felons? Well, the way you wrote the law, yes. Now, you know, do you really want that? And if you drill in on those points, it becomes clear that one of our board members has a son that serves in the military. And his example was, my son, you know, was issued a gun to go off and defend his country. And when he comes back to the border of Illinois, he has to surrender that gun because of its status and in the registration policies. And so here he is off defending our country, but he can't even carry the gun at home that he carries overseas to protect us.
It's a great
point. So all of those things, I think, would be the conversation starters. And some of that needs to happen behind closed doors, because it's, if you're in front of a microphone, you know, that's, you're going to say something differently than if you're talking one-on-one. And so some of that needs to be where you talk to some of these liberal folks in Springfield. I'd love to one-on-one just understand their real intent. And I'm not saying that I'll always like what I find is the real intent, but it'll help me understand. And at the end of the day, then we have to find out how and what angles we use to rally the troops, meaning the majority of the 12.5 of us, 12.5 million of us, to push back in ways that can be successful.
Along the lines of what you just mentioned, intent, I had sort of another burning question that I really got excited about asking you. And this is a conversation Joe and I had before we started podcasting. And it's, how does language, you know, important, fundamental, natural rights, like the freedom of speech and like the right to keep and bear arms, how do things like that, with such, that are so important and are written in such plain language, both in the federal constitution and in the Illinois constitution, how does it come to pass that we have a law like this in your view?
It is, they are taking every little piece that they can take. And so, almost criminalizing the free speech is, been documented to be one of the downfalls of a society. Yes. And so, you know, the so-called hate speech and the situation where they are pushing a lot of that to the point where you can't say something, you can't say something on social media now that without being held accountable by, quote, the media and the social media police. And that's dangerous. If you get to the point where you can't speak up, that is the quickest way to begin to decouple and take down a free society.
Yeah, I think those are the things, you know, those are the fundamental things of what makes us human, the ability. We have these tremendous brains as human beings, and they have thoughts inside them. And it's granted us speech, whether you believe that that's God-given or whether it's just part of nature. But that's what makes us human, is our ability to speak our mind and our thoughts and let other people know them. And then the ability to protect your life and your property, you know, the fruits of your labor, seem to be, when laws are passed that are counter those, it seems to be almost inhuman. And then when it comes to intent, it, you know, it really makes me question, like, is it just, in your view, is it just the function of, you know, Republicans are pro Second Amendment, and so we're Democrats. We have to be. It's sort of like the Marxist, you know, thesis and antithesis. You know, because one side took one stance on an issue, we have to automatically take the other. Or is there, you know, is there something more nefarious? Just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I tend to not. The Republican Party clearly supports the Second Amendment far better than the Democratic majority, the Democratic Party does.
Yes.
I have met conservative Democrats and a lot of folks on the campaign trail that understand, number one, I've met pro-life Democrats. Number two, I've met pro-Second Amendment Democrats. And several have said, you know, there's no place for me in the party right now, the way it's set up.
Interesting.
And so I tend to look at a person and judge them for how they feel, react, respond, and versus the party affiliation. So I would never want to, and I wouldn't want somebody to not give me a chance. I would, I'm a Republican. If a Democrat senator, call it one of my peers in the future,
yes,
I would want them to give me a chance, even though I'm not the same party of them. And so in the same way, I need to give everybody a chance. And I think what we'll find is we do that and just have grace, stand on principle. And I'm not saying vote in a way that would not represent, in my case, my constituents, but stand on principle and have grace along the way to build bridges to where those people that enjoy America and support our Constitution are going to preserve it. And if the light is turned on and some of these folks that are writing these bills and passing them see what's happening and what damage they're doing, I optimistically think that they can back off, because nobody wants another Hitler government and what they did by taking away all of the guns in Germany.
Absolutely.
That's refreshing, and I think that's going to be refreshing for our listeners to hear as well.
I agree. Several years ago, there was a court in Southern Illinois, and I forget which county it was or district it was, but one of the courts had actually said that the Illinois FOID system was actually unconstitutional, and I believe it was appealed, so a stay was put in place, and until today, the FOID system's in place. Do you see a path of getting the FOID system in Illinois, because it is rather antiquated and unconstitutional, do you see a path to getting that eliminated and maybe Illinois becoming a constitutional carry state? Or is that asking too much?
No, I don't think it's asking too much. I think we always have to aim high and shoot high, no pun intended. In this case, we need to push hard for that. You know, I can go to Indiana and I can live in Indiana and people look at me like, you know, what in the world is a FOID card and what are you talking about?
I've experienced that as well.
Yeah. And so, I think that we need to push for that. I would say, you know, for me to get elected and walk down there in the first term and start crafting bills that eliminate it, I'm probably not going to gain as much ground as I want. We have to, now I'll say it this way, we have to play the game the way those that are in power now have played the game, is we need to walk slowly. If we walk slowly, we can gain more ground than if we make a big splash and turn the other side off. But I think that the most important point is to analyze what's been put in place, look at the results and the ramifications, ask the leading questions as to what will this path lead to. And I think that's the way to start walking things back. And quite frankly, it'll come to, you know, we may have to push, but we got to push strategically. As an example, when I told the story a little bit ago about finding out that the our Grundy County board previously had given themselves Cadillac health insurance plans and only going to a few meetings a month. When we ran, we said we were going to, if we won, we were going to repeal that. Well, we won. And of course we put that in motion pretty quickly and walked through the committee process. Well, I had a couple of folks call me along the way. And one current board member said, you know, I understand that you've got the votes to pass this and remove the health insurance, but could you at least grandfather those of us in that are currently on the board and just make it for the new people not to get it? And first I said, you know, can you play that back to me? And he said, what, didn't you hear me? And I said, no, I just want to hear you say it again.
Right.
So he said it again and he just said, hey, I need that insurance. If I don't have that insurance, I'd have to go out and get a different job. I can't afford it. I said, do you really think that's what the voters put us in office for, was to grandfather those of you in that want to keep it? And he said, no, probably not. But I need you to really consider that. And I said, thanks, I'll consider it. Well, we moved forward like we said we were going to. And, you know, the people that pushed back that obviously didn't want to lose it, at the end of the vote, so once it gets through committee, it goes to full board. The final, guess what the final vote was to remove the health insurance? It was 18-0. No Democrat in this case was willing to stand up and vote no on keep and say they wanted to keep that health insurance publicly. because they knew that we would just play it right back to them during the next election cycle. And so in that case, it was fun. And I told the person afterwards, I was like, gee, you know, thanks for voting for our bill. And
he begrudgingly
said, you're welcome. But, you know, in that case, that's a very small example. But in some cases, you do have to put pressure on people. And we have to do it strategically. And so my thought on the FOID card and the whole process is, yes, it's antiquated. It doesn't work. It doesn't the intent of keeping the guns out of bad people's hands, it doesn't have anything to do with the FOID card. The people that are going to want to use the guns in a way that harms people or tries to illegally gain ground for themselves could care less about the FOID card. And so I think we have to walk through the process, but I'm anxious to get started.
Yeah, those people have done a pretty good job of proving that they will get the guns without a FOID.
Absolutely.
Chris, before we let you go for the evening, was there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on. I'm interested in listener feedback, and so if anybody would like to provide feedback, I'm all ears. I certainly do not claim to have all the knowledge I need to. And so if anybody could give me feedback, I'd be happy to give my cell phone. It's out there on the website all over anyway. But sure. I'd be happy to provide my contact information if that's appropriate.
Absolutely. Feel free.
So our website is chrisbalkema.com. So it's chrisbalkema.com. That's the website for the election. And then my cell phone is 815-641-0086. So I would love to get feedback. I'd love to hear people's thoughts. I'd love to understand different angles of approaches. And I'm excited to get to work in Springfield. And the primary is March 19th, early voting, although I don't really support the intent of early voting. On the other hand, it's the law, and so we have to embrace it. So early voting starts February 8th. So I would just ask listeners if there's places I should be. I've been at the Gun Save Lives meetings out at Jamie's Outpost in Ottawa. I've been to a couple of other events, but if there's places that I should be to help tell my story of what I want to do and help preserve and get back to the Second Amendment, please let me know where to be, and I would be happy to engage with folks that would allow me.
That's great. What I'd like to do is encourage people, if they're not currently registered to vote, is to go register so you can vote, because that is the only way that change is going to take place. And with that being said, Chris, I'd like to let you know that I go to several meetings for different gun organizations, one of which is Illinois State Rifle Association. And at those meetings, people generally have an opportunity to address fellow members. So what I'd like to do is let people know at that meeting that we had this conversation, that the podcast is out there. Let them know where they can find it, both on Spotify and our website, which is www.2atoday.us, and that is the number 2, the letter A, and the word today.us, and offer people the opportunity to give me feedback in person on the website or even within the podcast, and any of that information would be passed along to you.
That is wonderful. Thank you very much. The more we engage like this, the better, and it'll encourage people to stand up and realize that we all can make a difference. And so I'm grateful for the opportunity to connect with people, and I'm all ears and would take any coaching or advice that folks have.
Couldn't agree with you more.
That sounds great.
Best of luck in the election.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
both for doing this.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You have a great one.
All right, you too. Take care.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now.